Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Monday, January 29th, 2018. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:30 p.m. Committee members present today, Vice Chair Senator Coghill, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Meyer, and Senator Wilikowski and myself, Chair Senator Giesel. I expect Senator Stedman and Senator Bishop to show up shortly. Thanks to Ann and Eileen who are helping us out today. So today the committee has two items on its agenda. First, we're going to take up Senate Joint Resolution 4 by Senator Olson. We'll then take up House Joint Resolution 12 by Representative Tarr. So the first item, Senate Joint Resolution 4, exempting Alaska's legal ivory crafts, a staple of our Alaska Native community, from the blanket ivory ban targeting poaching operations in Africa and Asia. This resolution is sponsored by Senator Olson, who could not be here due to family members. His family are in our thoughts and prayers as they deal with a family situation. We do have his staff, Ms. Jackie Boyer, here to introduce the resolution. So I invite Ms. Boyer to the table to introduce herself and the resolution. Welcome. Do we need to take an at ease?
Okay,
we're ready to go.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jacqueline Boyer, and I'm staff to Senator Olson. He sends his thanks to the committee for hearing this resolution and his sincere apologies for not being able to make it due to family circumstances. If it pleases the chair, I'll do a brief overview of the resolution. So this was brought to Senator Olson's attention from his various constituencies having faced a serious negative impact from some states that have banned ivory. Some of the bans vary, from being very specific, listing the species and subspecies of what they ban, and then others have been very broad in just banning all ivory, like New Jersey. That was in 2014, but in 2016 they amended their statutes to be more specific, but our concern has to do with, more states doing bans and further imposing harsh consequences for our legal artists in our state who obtain ivory through the byproducts of subsistence, or we've learned that there's a huge community of artists in Skagway that use fossilized ivory for their livelihood. So and then with that I go over the changes that were requested. So with the proposed changes for the committee substitute, this was requested in light of those artists in Skagway who are non-native and use ivory legally. So the changes reflected are just in light of that. To make it non-racial. And with that.
Great. Ms. Boyer, we can look at those changes specifically in a moment or two when we adopt the CS. So I'll let you just hold on that for a couple minutes. We do have some folks online that were invited to testify. So we can go ahead and hear from them. Ms. Vera Metcalf and Candace Cahill. So, Ms. Metcalf, can you hear us?
Yes, ma'am. This is Vera Metcalf. I can hear you clear.
Great. Welcome. If you would introduce yourself with your name and your affiliation, and then tell us why your testimony concerning this resolution.
Right. Well, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Vera Metcalf. I'm the director for the Eskimo Walrus Commission here at Koyaarick in Nome. And we represent about 19 coastal communities in North Slope, Northwest Arctic, Bering Strait, Bethel, and Dillingham. I'll just give a brief testimony. As you know, the Marine Mammal Protection Act, or the MMPA, allows harvest of the Pacific walrus for Alaska Native coastal residents. This exemption was included because it is a very fundamental and culturally important activity for our communities. Even though, as you are well aware, there are many changes occurring in the Arctic's environment, ecosystem, climate, societies, and economics. These changes continue to threaten the safe and proper harvest of walrus and other wildlife resources. Utilizing all the gifts from the harvest of marine or other wildlife resources are also very fundamental to the cultural values of Alaska Native people. If the use and value of walrus ivory is generally outlawed, Alaska Natives could stop retrieving walrus ivory, which could be considered wasteful take under the MMPA, unless the take is for subsistence purposes, and if such taking is done for the purposes of creating and selling authentic Native articles of handicrafts and clothing. If there's no market for creating and selling Alaska Native ivory art or handicraft, would Alaska Natives continue to create them? EWC continues to support SGR4, including the proposed changes as the economic and cultural impacts of walrus ivory remains critical to Alaska Native communities. Thank you again for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you very much for testifying, Ms. Metcalf. Do any committee members have questions to ask Ms. Metcalf? All right, seeing none. The other invited testimony is Candace Cahill. Is she here in the room? All right, not seeing her, which is... you're on the line.
I'm on the line.
Oh, wonderful. Welcome, Ms. Cahill. If you could identify yourself for the record and give us your affiliation and your testimony.
All right, my name is Candace Cahill. I am from Skagway. I'm a small business owner and artist here in Skagway. And I was asked to kind of testify on behalf of our larger artist population that's here in Skagway, and I certainly feel that I can speak to a lot of the concerns for non-native users of ivory. I'm specifically here to urge you to take into consideration the impact this resolution and the laws that are in the process of being built, how it impacts Alaskans who are non-native. There have been, I think, considerable efforts directed at protecting the rights of Alaska Natives, which it should be, to be able to harvest and utilize the walrus ivory, as well as protecting their rights to collect and use extinct ivories from mammoth and mastodon. But the concerns of non-native use of fossil materials has pretty largely been overlooked. The artwork that I do, my husband does, and many of the people that I'm talking on behalf of, we use fossil ivory, so fossil walrus, fossil mammoth, fossil mastodon. Much of this ivory is collected by Alaska Natives, and we buy it from them. So it's an income source for them as well. But as a non-native, I can only use that type of ivory. Because the animals have been dead for hundreds or even thousands of years, it's the only type of ivory that's legal because it hasn't harmed any animals in its collection. So the use of fossil ivory in our work makes up a significant portion of our business, and the banning of that would affect us. It would essentially shut us down. Much of the business that we do is generated from tourism that comes to Skagway, and over the past several years, there's been a big increase in awareness regarding the protection of elephants and the legalities of ivory as a whole. And as a result, I spend a great deal of time, and those of us that work in this industry spend a great deal of time trying to educate people about fossil ivory and how it takes hundreds of years for the ivory to show fossilization. And, you know, it covered the distinction between walrus ivory that's fresh versus what is fossil. address the significant differences between modern elephant ivory and ancient mammoth and ancient mastodon ivory. You know, talking about that there are various ways to distinguish the types of ivories and ways to do that and resources they can access for further learning. We also have an online business, but we are currently prohibited from selling work that incorporates fossil ivory in the four states that have outlawed it. And there's the potential that we could be losing many more states over the next couple of years if Congress doesn't act. So we need to be able to sell our work or our business and many other businesses around Alaska will fail. And now, we're all keenly aware of the need to protect the species that are not extinct. You know, I specifically support all bans on modern elephant ivory. I'm in support of the existing restrictions on fresh walrus ivory, but they're there. They work. What we need to do is we need to maintain the ability for Alaskan natives and non-natives to continue to work with fossil ivory and for natives to work with the fresh ivory. Without the work that we're doing, a lot of the fossil ivory, it's simply going to be lost. And what we are doing is really preserving the beauty and the extraordinary qualities of these types of fossilized ivory. In my preparation to talk with you today, I was able to review the Senate Bill 1965 that was introduced in U.S. Congress last year by Senator Sullivan, the Allowing Alaska Ivory Act. I'm really, really concerned about the wording of this bill, as it does nothing whatsoever to take concerns of non-natives into consideration. And I really want to do all in my power to ensure that our concerns are addressed. I do urge you to move forward with the resolution that you have before you, but to be certain that it does specifically include wording that protects the use of fossil ivories by all of us, not just Alaska natives. Again, just reiterating that a ban on ivory that includes fossil ivory would devastate my business and a lot of other small and large businesses in Alaska, and that the ivory that we're using, it does no harm, and in fact is a natural resource that would otherwise just disintegrate and be lost. So I encourage you, I'm happy to take questions, or if there's anything that I can do to be of assistance, I'm happy to do that. I do plan to be in contact with Senator Sullivan's office to see how I can help there. And I thank you for your time and consideration today.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Cahill. Any questions from committee members? All right, that concludes our invited testimony. I'm going to take a moment here to recognize that Senator Stedman joined us a few minutes ago, and Senator Bishop is excused today. So you've heard some discussion of changes that Senator Olson requested, and at this time I want to bring a committee substitute forward as our working document. Vice Chair Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We take for our working draft Order 30-LS-0109 Oscar before the committee as our working draft.
Thank you, and I'll object for purposes of discussion. So I will invite committee staff to come forward and explain the changes in this committee substitute.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Resources Committee. My name is Ike Gialopsis, and I serve as staff to Senator Guy Solanta, the Senate Resources Committee. Madam Chair, the committee has in its hearing packet a document with the letterhead of this committee and entitled underneath it Senate Resources Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 4, the summary of changes from version Delta to version Oscar. And I will list those five changes that are in this proposed committee substitute now, Madam Chair. The first change, Madam Chair, occurs on page 1, lines 1 through 3. And this change deletes the title language from the prior resolution, which was originally found on page 1, lines 1 through 2, and it now inserts a new title with the following words: urging the United States Congress to pass legislation providing for the exemption of legally acquired walrus, mammoth, and mastodon ivory from laws that ban the sale, use, and possession of ivory. The second change, Madam Chair, occurs on page 1, lines 11 through 12, and it adds a new whereas clause with the following language: whereas non-native individuals in the state use legally acquired mammoth ivory to make handicrafts, jewelry, and artwork, and. The third change, Madam Chair, can be found on page 2, lines 6 and lines 11, and it deletes the word native, which was found on the previous version, which were found on page 2, lines 4 and line 9. The fourth change, Madam Chair, occurs on page 2, line 17, and adds the words legally acquired. The fifth and final change to this proposed CS, Madam Chair, is found on page 2, lines 20 through 27, and this was done at the urging of Legislative Legal. This deleted the entire language from the previous version that sent and directed copies to various dignitaries, which had been found previously on page 2, lines 18 through 20, and reformatted those to the correct dignitaries. That is the totality of the changes in this proposed committee substitute, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Gialopsis. Any questions on those changes? Ms. Boyer, any comments about Senator Olson's intention with these changes?
Yes, Madam Chair, for the record again, Jackie Boyer. So Senator Olson requested these changes, you know, again to reflect, you know, kind of neutral language to, you know, encompass all Alaskan artists that use ivory that they legally acquire. You know, and that's the, you know, urgency in this resolution.
Great, thank you. So with that, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to adoption of the committee substitute, version O? Seeing none, version O then will be before us as the working document. The public has been able to view version O as it was posted on Friday on the legislative website. So at this time, I'm going to open public testimony. I have quite a few people, well, not quite a few, but some people online wishing to testify. I'm going to start at the Nome LIO. And Alice Bioff is present, wishing to testify. Alice, can you hear us?
Hello, this is Alice
Bioff. Hi, Alice, welcome. If you would identify yourself by your name and affiliation and give us your testimony on this resolution.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity to offer testimony today. My name is Alice Bioff. I'm a resident of Nome, Alaska, currently employed at Kowarik, and an Alaska State Council on the Arts Council member. Thank you all for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Joint Resolution Number 4. I am a tribal member of the Native Village of Koyuk and grew up there and here in Nome. My family and I have lived in Nome for the last 18 years. For much of that time, I have been employed by Kowarik, the regional Native nonprofit consortium of tribes for the Bering Straits region, as a business planning specialist. Through our work here at Kowarik, I am honored and privileged to work with artist entrepreneurs within our community. We provide direct technical assistance, offering tools and resources to assist artists continue their work so that they can sustain themselves, their families, and their communities. Walrus ivory harvested during subsistence hunting is one of the main materials artist entrepreneurs in our region use to carve into unique traditional artwork that has been recognized for its amazing craftsmanship throughout the world. Artist entrepreneurs are economic development drivers in their communities. I see firsthand the economic impact of selling ivory has in our communities. But most importantly, how the arts and crafts keep our traditional practices alive and strong, beautiful work being passed down from one generation to the next. Our art is weaved into who we are as Indigenous people, and having access to the materials to continue that art is vital. I support this resolution. It would be a shame to see our ability to sell ivory collapse because of a lack of understanding of a culture that is unique and special with a history of customary traditions and ability to live with nature and ability to successfully self-manage a resource such as walrus. Please educate those that who do not understand. This resolution is an important step in advocating and protecting the inherent rights of each and every one of our tribal members. Our ability to harvest and use the byproduct of the animals we hunt and sustain our families is crucial. Thank you to Senator Olson for bringing this resolution forward, and thank you for this opportunity to offer testimony today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bioff. Next at the Nome LIO is Melanie Banky. Melanie, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for providing us opportunity to testify. I'm Melanie Banky. I'm the president and CEO of Kowarik, but I'm also, on a personal note, the daughter of an Alaska Native artist, and my two younger brothers both also carve ivory to make a living. I'm calling in support of this resolution and want to make it clear to our members of Congress that the state of Alaska supports our Alaska Native artists. There was a comment earlier about the non-Native community. There are several non-Native business owners who would also be affected by this, so this isn't just about Alaska Native artists. There is an entire community within the state that relies on ivory and bone and mastodon one way or another to support themselves and their families and contribute to the Alaska economy. I do have one comment about the proposed amendment where the word Native is being deleted and replaced with non-Native. I would ask that it say Native and non-Native in reference to the mammoth ivory, because the way it is currently being proposed to be amended sounds as though only non-Natives can work with mammoth ivory. So I'd like it to be made clear that it's Native and non-Natives that are able to work with mammoth ivory, and then anywhere else within the resolution, if it's going to refer to something that's restricted to Alaska Natives, that be adequately reviewed by legal staff so that what's being proposed isn't contrary to the MNPA. I'll keep it brief. I support this resolution. I would love to see the state of Alaska not only urging Congress to do something, but imagine, if you will, if Alaska salmon was being banned in the other states, or our crab or our halibut. The legislature would not stand for this. Our administration would not stand for this. And ivory is a unique product that comes from our state, and we need to protect it and also promote it on par with our salmon and our crab and fish. So I'd like to leave you with that challenge, and thank you again for giving us this opportunity to testify. I am in support of SJR 4.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Banky. Next, we have in the off-net Sue Steinecker from Nome. Sue, can you hear us? Be sure to unmute your phone if it happens to be muted, Sue. We're not hearing you. Okay, she apparently has been disconnected. So we also have Val Giddings from Silver Spring, I guess that's probably Maryland, I'm not sure, available for questions. All right, thank you.
Senator, thank you very much. My name is Val Giddings. I'm calling in from Silver Spring, Maryland. But I'm actually waiting to speak to House Joint Resolution number 12.
All right, thank you. You were put on a different list, so I'll have you hold on. We're going to finish this one first. Thanks very much, though, Val. So with that covers all of the public testimony. So at this time, I will close public testimony. We do have a further cleanup amendment for this bill. So, Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment would go to page 1, line 11. I would move that we adopt amendment number 1, which is the LS0109/Oscar1.
Thank you. And I will object for purposes of discussion.
So, Madam Chair, it just replaces the word mammoth with fossilized if you look on page 11. I mean, page 1, line 11.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. I'm going to ask committee staff to come forward. We heard from one of the testifiers that there was concern that we needed to specify both Native and non-Native in terms of the fossilized ivory. So if you could comment on that.
Again, for the record, Jackie Boyer, staff to Senator Olson. In regard to the comment made by one of the testifiers, the proposed changes to delete the word Native was to encompass that, all artists in Alaska use, well, some artists in Alaska use legally acquired ivory. The intent was not to, you know, disparage one group or to, negatively impact someone, but just to clarify that, you know, all artists can use legally acquired ivory.
Thank you, Ms. Boyer. Mr. Gialopsis?
For the record, again, Ike Gialopsis, staff to Senator Giesel and the Senate Resources Committee. Madam Chair, at the behest of the sponsor's office, the term mammoth was replaced with the word fossilized because the fear was that by simply putting in the word mammoth, where non-native artists are allowed to use fossilized mammoth, walrus, and mastodon, there was a concern that by being prohibitive, the opportunities for both mastodon and fossilized walrus ivory would be left out from here. And so Ms. Boyer, the sponsor staff, is correct. This was not a whereas clause removal of the term native to be exclusive of the native community, since they have rights to both fossilized and non-fossilized opportunities, but to clarify that non-native artists have access only to all fossilized ivory.
Thank you. Any questions on the amendment? And for the purposes of this committee, amendment work order number 30LS0109/Oscar1 will be entitled amendment number 1 for purposes of discussion. Any questions about this amendment from committee members? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. And so thank you very much for that explanation. So by removing the objection, are there further objections to this amendment? Yes, Senator Wilikowski.
Amendment just to the bill in general.
Okay. Well, with that then, with the removal then, we will adopt amendment number 1. So further discussion. Senator Wilikowski.
If I could get Jacqueline to...
Ms. Boyer, if you could come back to the table. So we are now under discussion for the committee substitute of Senate Joint Resolution Version Oscar as amended before the committee. Senator Wilikowski.
So just two questions. I don't know if you know the answer to these or not, but maybe if you can get back to me at some point. And I'm not going to hold up the resolution, Madam Chair, but question one is, could Congress preempt this issue? In other words, could Congress actually do what is being proposed here, which is to say that no state shall prohibit the importation, sale, et cetera, or barter of walrus, ivory, or whalebone. Do you know if they can preempt that entire area?
For the record again, Jackie Boyer, staff to Senator Olson. In my discussion with legal, yes, they can, and, you know, in Senator Sullivan's bill, I believe that's his intent.
Okay. Great. And then
follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
Just looking at the Hawaii bill, for example, and just flipping through, the bills seem kind of similar. But so the Hawaii bill, for example, says, I think that's donuts, Madam Chair?
Yes, thank you.
So just looking at the Hawaii bill, it says, unless otherwise authorized by federal law, including the Marine Mammal Protection Act, no person shall sell, offer to sell, et cetera, and then it goes on to say whale or walrus. So question one on that is the sale, I guess it's not, so the sale of these products are not authorized under the Marine Mammal Protection Act?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that's kind of the basis of this resolution, just because, you know, there's extreme ambiguity in, you know, does the MMPA protect this? You know, can states actually do this?
Maybe that's the gray area.
Yeah, I mean, the MMPA allows you to, but, you know, here we're saying that you're not allowed to.
Okay, and then the
follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
Other issue is, so then it goes on, it says, unless otherwise authorized by federal law, you can't, no person shall sell, et cetera, whale or walrus, insofar as the species, subspecies, or distinct population segment is listed. And then it gives two things. Number one, on Appendix 1 or 2 of the Convention of International Trade in Endangered Species, or number two, as endangered or threatened under the Endangered Species Act. So is any of the ivory that is being proposed to be sold, does that meet either of those two requirements?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, that I don't know off the top of my head, but in deference to the recent Supreme Court decision not to take up the seal appeal, I'll ask natives can, harvest seal, regardless if they are endangered or not, just because, we have, Alaska Natives have subsistence rights. So it's, I would kind of defer to that.
Okay. So I guess, if I can, I'm sure, yes. Neither whale nor walrus species that are being, the ivory that's being sold out, they're not on the Endangered Species Act list, correct?
That I don't know.
Okay. All right. That's all I had, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other questions for staff of the bill sponsor, the resolution sponsor? All right. Seeing none, thank you. And if, Ms. Boyer, if you could find answers to Senator Wilikowski's questions and send it forward to me, I'll distribute it to committee members. They're good questions that we should probably have the answers to. Thank you. All right. If there's no further discussion, Senator Coghill, I will entertain a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we move the resolution number 4 as amended from committee, the CS as amended, work order 30LS0109, Oscar, as from committee with individual recommendations, and I think it's got a zero fiscal note.
Are there any objections? All right, seeing none, the committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 4 will, as amended, will move from this committee to the floor, actually. We are the last committee. So we'll take a brief at ease to sign those documents. We're back on the record. So next we're going to take up the second item of business. It's House Joint Resolution 12, which is opposing genetically engineered salmon. We have the resolution sponsor, Representative Tarr, in the room and her staff. So welcome. I'll let you present your resolution.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the committee members for the opportunity to present this today. I'm Representative Garen Tarr from Anchorage, joined by staffer.
My name is Thatcher Brower. I'm staff to Representative Garen Tarr from Anchorage.
Also a fisherman, so he's my go-to person on all matters fisheries. Thank you so much for us hearing HJR 12 today, opposing genetically modified salmon. And this topic is not a new topic of conversation for the legislature. When I first started working on this in 2013, we were still pushing the FDA to not approve genetically modified salmon. That's changed with the November 2015 decision to allow genetically modified salmon. And why I started working on this back in 2013 and continue to be concerned about it is it's the first time the FDA has approved a genetically modified animal for human consumption. So, we do have genetically modified plants, and those have been on the market. They were approved in the early 90s, 93, 94 time frame. So there's significant, for example, canola and other products that you might get that are GMO. But we have not, prior to this, had a genetically modified animal approved for human consumption. And just as a review for folks who haven't seen this, it's genetically modified. The genetically modified salmon, the Aqua Bounty Advantage salmon, as they're called and trademarked as. The way they accomplish this is by using the ocean pout and the Chinook salmon. The ocean pout helps the fish grow year-round, and then the Chinook DNA helps it grow bigger, faster. And so they reduce the seasonal variation that's built into the normal life cycle with the one addition of genetic information, and then they're able to make them bigger than an Atlantic salmon normally would be by inserting the Chinook or the king salmon DNA. And so what you can see here in this pictures is just a comparison to a wild versus a genetically modified salmon and what they look like. And one of the concerns I have about this, when you think about our fisheries in Alaska, they're, you know, what we're so proud of is having really strong fisheries policies. We think that we will manage, you know, sustainably so that we have this renewable resource for years to come, right? We think that it'll be important not only for our economy but for our culture. And so, you know, our relationship, I would say, with salmon may be different than the company that is promoting the genetically modified salmon. And this is information from, you know, their website. And really you can see this is not about sustainability so much as it is about growing a product faster. And so, you know, these are the pictures I think of when I think about Alaska's wild salmon and healthy fisheries. Here's some more. I don't think of something that looks quite like this. And this is what their production facilities look like. So they're indoor facilities, and we'll talk a little bit about the risks associated with genetically modified salmon. You know, this indoor facilities is one of the reasons that people say it may be less risky, and we'll talk about why that may not be the case. But I guess, you know, just in contrast to what we're trying to accomplish with our wild Alaska fisheries, this really highly mechanized indoor operation, this just does not say sustainable fishery management to me. And so some of the concerns, the threats to wild salmon, risks to human health, and risks to our state economy, and we'll just kind of talk through each of those briefly. The threat to wild salmon, and that's why I wanted to mention and show that picture about the indoor rearing facilities. Why we still think that escapement could pose a threat is that these genetically modified salmon are produced in three different countries. And we'll look at what the facilities look like in British Columbia. I've actually visited, in Prince Edward Island, I've actually visited the facility where the eggs are produced. And then they're shipped to Panama, and that's where the fish are grown out in the facilities that would look like the pictures I showed you. And then they're sold for consumption in the United States. So it's somewhat sort of strange in terms of regulatory oversight because it has all of these different jurisdictions involved. But when we think about escapement more broadly, this is something Alaska fishermen talk about having, caught Atlantic farm salmon, and that's been something that's of concern, you know, in terms of how that those farm fish are escaping into the wild. And so there are risks associated with that. This is an image that shows you where the Aqua Bounty facility is on Prince Edward Island, and just that tiny little island there. But you can see this Bay of Fortune that goes and basically is part of the waterways that go into the St. Lawrence Seaway and into the Atlantic Ocean. That's where their facility is. And I have been there myself. When I first started working on this in 2013, there were some folks interested. They're also a very tourism-based economy in Prince Edward Island, and they were very concerned because with so much controversy around this, what, you know, has been dubbed the frankenfish, when you Google Prince Edward Island, the first item that was coming up was about the frankenfish, and so they were very concerned about how that was going to impact their local economy, their tourism economy, and whether, given there was so much controversy about this, would people choose not to visit, you know, as a result of it. So they didn't want to be branded in that way, if you will. And so that's what made them interested in the work we were doing here in Alaska, and they were very supportive of our efforts. Again, and at that time, it was, you know, opposing the approval, but that, you know, have continued to stay in touch with them, and we'll see that folks there have filed a lawsuit as well. But we went to their facility, and it was really concerning because it's in such close proximity to that water body that, you know, you just feel like, you know, there is a legitimate concern about escapement there because it's so closely situated to a water body that then feeds into a water body where Atlantic salmon, native Atlantic salmon, live. Some of the other threats that we are concerned about, that they could spread disease. This is something you see with farm salmon versus wild salmon, and how that, you know, introduction of disease can be a problem. This part about them crossbreeding and being more aggressive, you know, for a while that was speculation about whether that was true or not. But then there were reports that came out in the scientific literature that was very concerning, that found that not only could they interbreed, and in this case what they did with the wild trout, because it's a closely related fish, so not only could they interbreed, but that the new hybridized fish could outcompete and could outgrow the wild variety. And so should that kind of interbreeding take place, it could be very concerning, because then, you know, these fish could be more aggressive than their wild counterparts, and that would be disruptive in that ecosystem, and they might, you know, be able to outcompete them. And at one point I had read somewhere, you know, that there was this estimate of how many life cycles it would take to where, you know, that the more aggressive interbred fish would outcompete and overtake the native population. You know, some of that I think is a little bit difficult in terms of the estimates you would make, but certainly, you know, that's the concern. However long it would take for that to happen, that's certainly the concern, and why we want to protect our wild Alaska salmon. Risks to human health, and this has been a big part of why there have been legal challenges. The FDA approved genetically modified salmon under the veterinary medicine component of the FDA rather than as a food product. And so there have been folks who have questioned whether that was really the appropriate way to test that, if you were testing for health, human health concerns. So that in itself has just been a big part of the opposition to this particular proposal. You know, even for folks who may be supportive in the end, just that the wrong sort of pathway to getting that approval was used. And so because of that, there wasn't sort of, you know, the rigorous scientific, you know, examination of what the human health risks might be. And then risk to the state's economy. Again, you know, some of this is looking back at what happened when the introduction of farm salmon. But when farm salmon was introduced, what happened is there was a huge dip in the price of wild salmon. And that was right around when we ended up creating the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. And, you know, our response to that was to invest heavily in marketing our wild Alaska salmon. They've been really successful in doing so, and last report I got was that Wild Alaska Salmon is the second most recognized brand on restaurant menus. So, you know, we've invested millions and millions of dollars in, you know, making it known about our high-quality salmon, our high-quality protein product, and we've been successful, so that's something we can feel good about. And the question and what leads us to having this resolution before us today and in support of Senator Murkowski's work is that, you know, how does the introduction of this genetically modified salmon, absent labeling, so a consumer can know whether they're getting the wild Alaska product or a genetically modified product, you know, how will that undermine people's confidence in our product? And, you know, will people feel like, well, I was eating Alaska wild salmon because I knew it had health benefits. I knew, you know, that the reports, it's, you know, the water's clean, that they do it sustainably. You know, for any consumer that cares about any of those issues or might be looking for that in the food products that they buy, you know, what happens if we, you know, we have a situation where that's undermined? And then, of course, you know, the fishing industry is our largest private sector employer, and right now, I know in every industry, we're like want to make sure that we keep jobs, not lose jobs. So Alaskans are not alone in opposing this. You know, something that's happened will be interesting to see what happens in the market. Major retailers have said that they will not sell the genetically modified salmon. I was trying to remember if we put some names on there. Retailers like Fred Meyer and Costco, where a lot of Alaskans, you know, certainly buy their food, and if they're buying fish, might buy it from them. So that's been promising. A lot of these retailers have come forward and said, you know, we're not going to sell this product. But it still remains, you know, a challenge that it was approved and could, you know, in the places where they haven't said that, it could be sold. These numbers are changing all of the time. I updated this last spring and didn't have anything more recent, you know, than these numbers, for example, the 40 members of Congress. So that was kind of the last list I got. But I think that's fairly up to date. There's also international opposition. So some of those folks I met that, you know, from Prince Edward Island, they, when the approval was first made, they filed a lawsuit from the Canadian government for the way that they had approved, because the Canadian government approved the production of the genetically modified eggs. So just that phase of it. So they were specifically focused on that. And then Panama is the place where the fish are actually grown. In Panama, there was also an incident where the company was fined because of some escapement issues. And so, you know, in terms of the regulatory part of this, right, it involves three different countries. So you could see where there's, you know, potential for problems simply because of the jurisdictional differences and things like that. So they have engaged in lawsuits. And then in the U.S., there have been some fishing groups and environmental groups and consumer safety groups that all come together and also filed a lawsuit. And we looked to see if there was any action on this just yet, and I don't think it's made its way through the court. So it's still an active lawsuit. And again, this goes back to, you know, how this particular lawsuit calls into question how it was approved in the first place for this sort of regulation of animal drugs, and whether that's really appropriate for something that's going to be for human consumption. I think we just froze now. That may be the last page on this one. I think there's one more page, though. So that kind of brings us up to date where we are. The last part I wanted to talk about is that Senator Murkowski, and I want to applaud her and the rest of our congressional delegation for their leadership, of course, on this issue. They're outspoken advocates for Alaska wild salmon and appreciate that. This summer, on July 11th, Senator Murkowski did introduce legislation to mandate the labeling of genetically engineered salmon. So you'll see that, you know, the way the resolution is written is both opposing but also calling for labeling. We're definitely in support of her legislation. It would require that any salmon that is genetically engineered be labeled as quote-unquote genetically engineered or quote-unquote GE salmon. And then additionally, the bill requires an independent third-party scientific review of the FDA's environmental assessment for all GE fish for human consumption. So that would be an additional, I think, safety protection put into place that was not in place for this approval. And you can't find it now, but the Aqua Bounty website, prior to when this approval took place, used to list a whole number of species that they were interested in having genetically modified, from shrimp to crab to other fish. So, you know, I think there's a lot of people sort of sitting here thinking, okay, you know, we really need to understand what's happening here before the floodgates are open and, you know, we see many more applications and you know, concerns for the marine environment. So I think that's a big piece of it, this piece, again, that calling into question whether the regulatory framework was the correct one and if it shouldn't instead be something that focuses on human consumption. That bill has been referred to the Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. It has not received a hearing yet. It's S-1528, and it's co-sponsored by Senator Dan Sullivan, Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington, and Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon, so kind of all the West Coast folks there. So I think that's all we have for the introduction, and, of course, be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Great. Committee members. Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Representative. I think this is a very important resolution. I look forward to supporting it. Just a couple questions. So the first, be it resolved on page 2, says we're opposing the approval of the Aqua Bounty, Aqua Vantage. Is that the only genetically engineered salmon that we know of?
Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski, yes. They're the only application that's been approved at this time, and the application is specific to this three-country scenario for the eggs, the growing of the fish, and then the selling of the fish.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
And on the next resolve, it's urging the legislature, saying legislature urges U.S. Congress to enact legislation that requires prominently labeling genetically engineered salmon. Would it be possible to for Congress to outright ban the sale of genetically engineered salmon, or does that violate any sort of constitutional provisions? Do you want to go there, or is that, we think this is sufficient?
Through the chair, to Senator Wilikowski, I believe in Congress they could ban, because that decision would supersede the decision by the FDA. In Alaska, we are limited by the Interstate Commerce Clause from what we can say. I actually do have a bill in that would ban the sale of genetically modified salmon in Alaska, and I guess I was feeling a little feisty when I introduced that, thinking, the way the company would have to show harm to say that it violated the Interstate Commerce Clause. So they would have to prove that, okay, barring this law, that they would have stood to make a lot of money in Alaska. And I think we would have a strong argument that Alaskans probably aren't going to buy this fish if they know that it's a genetically modified fish, probably for the same reason, we if we looked at sales, we probably sell a lot less farm salmon in Alaska than other places, because people prefer the fish they caught, first of all. And then if they haven't caught enough, then they go to their friends. And then if their friends don't have any, then we go to the grocery store and buy. But I think we buy wild Alaska salmon. And so, at the state level, I'd be happy for us to sort of poke at that a little bit and have that conversation. And that's why we put that bill in. But I do think we could encourage federal action that would ban the sale of these fish.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski. Yeah.
And what about in restaurants? Is there, this is a problem. Every time I go to a restaurant, I ask the question, and the reports I've seen, there's like 50% of the time they say it's wild Alaska salmon. It's really not. Mm-hmm. Has there been any discussion about what we can do on that front? Because this is for labeling, right? But the mm-hmm. restaurant could get it, and it's labeled, but when you go to order it, you have no idea what you're actually ordering. Is there any discussion on how to address that issue?
Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski, I think I know the same report you're referring to that came out maybe like a year ago or so, and it was pretty alarming. I know that from the ASME folks, for example, they do a lot on the education front and try to really work with, retailers and restaurant owners to, educate them on where they're buying their products from and make sure that they, can follow sort of the chain of custody, if you will, to know that that truly was a wild Alaska salmon product. But I think that's a problem we need to address, and think of how we would do that. Hopefully the folks that are working on it now are doing a pretty good job in trying to educate folks and do that outreach. I think what it sort of tells us too, though, is that, again, that work that we've done to make that a recognized brand that means something, they may be just trying to take advantage of that. And in that case, that is a big problem because, again, the consumer confidence. You want people to get that high-quality product, because if they get a bad product and they think, oh, that's the wild Alaska salmon, they're not going to be inspired to buy that or purchase it again. And it's probably an inferior product if it's, farmed relative to ours, my opinion. But I think that's an issue we need to figure out how to address as well.
Further questions on the resolution? All right. Thank you very much, Representative Tarr. And Thatcher. I'm going to open public testimony now, and I have, looks like, two people online. So I'm going to go to the off-net first. Val Giddings is on the off-net. Val, can you hear us?
Yes, Madam Chair, I can hear you well.
Great. If you would introduce yourself for the record, give us your affiliation and your testimony.
Happy to do that. My name is Val Giddings. I am an independent consultant specializing in the regulation and policy related to biotechnology products. I have 3 decades of experience in this, working as a scientist and a regulatory expert in government, international organizations, industry, and think tanks. I've been asked today to speak to you folks on behalf of the Biotechnology Innovation Organization, but they have not told me what to say, and the views that I express are my own. I am an angler and a lover of wilderness. I have a brother and sister who were born in Alaska. I share your concerns for the safety and sustainability of Alaska's salmon fisheries. They are a crown jewel in our national heritage of incalculable value, and they face a number of threats. Unfortunately, the aqua-advantage salmon that is framed in this bill as one of those threats is, in fact, the opposite. To the extent that this aqua advantage salmon is commercially successful, it will in fact reduce the threats from farmed salmon to Alaska's wild salmon. Aqua advantage salmon are intended to be grown in recirculating terrestrial systems far from any location where they might be able to escape. This is exactly the method for growing Atlantic salmon that the Monterey Seafood Watch program has rated as the best choice. The data show that if these salmon did escape, their biology and behavior make it highly unlikely that any would survive in the wild. I'd be happy to talk about this in detail if anyone is interested. If they did escape and survive, they are sterile and incapable of reproduction. If commercial sea pens of Atlantic salmon, now in the Pacific Northwest, were all replaced by Aqua Advantage salmon grown in these indoor recirculating tanks, the concerns that salmon sea pens raise for wild salmon populations would be completely negated. The legislation claims the proximity to the ocean of an egg-rearing facility on Prince Edward Island, more than 3,000 miles away on the other side of North America, is potentially hazardous to Alaska's wild salmon. But even if the Aqua Advantage salmon were fertile and capable of reproduction, eggs or fry from that facility require fresh water and cannot survive in the ocean. The other concerns raised by the legislation are equally unfounded. The FDA conducted the most thorough review of this salmon that any animal has ever gone through before being introduced into the food supply. Their choice to do this under the new animal drug provisions of the veterinary biologics law meant that it went through a much more extensive scrutiny than it would have done otherwise. All of FDA's analyses were made available for multiple rounds of public comment, including an independent third-party review to which the FDA dedicated 3 days at a public meeting at which I was present and testified. I have read all of those documents, all the comments to this docket through multiple rounds of notice and comment rulemaking, and followed this process very closely from the beginning. At the end of this unprecedented analysis, the FDA concluded that this salmon is indistinguishable from other salmon. It is at least as safe to eat as any other salmon, and the way it will be grown gives it the smallest environmental impact of any farmed salmon on the planet. Instead of worrying about non-existent risks from this salmon, those concerned for Alaska's wild salmon populations would be well advised to focus on actual, real, and present dangers. I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Giddings. Any questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. I have in the room here Frances Leach. Welcome, Ms. Leach.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Frances Leach, and I am the Executive Director of United Fishermen of Alaska. UFA is on the record with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in strong opposition for their approval of genetically modified salmon for production and consumption in the United States. We have adamantly requested that the FDA regulations require that any genetically modified salmon or any other seafood products be clearly labeled as such. Alaska leads the world in sustainable fisheries management practices, producing over 95% of commercially harvested wild salmon in the United States. And we have gone to great lengths and expense to differentiate our seafood products in the marketplace. Consumers should be provided with clear labeling so that they may make informed decisions in their seafood purchases. Consumers have the right to know what is in their food and what they're eating. We are very concerned that if genetically modified seafood is not labeled, Alaska fishermen and coastal communities will suffer job losses and economic hardships due to consumer confusion about the wholesomeness of wild Alaska salmon in general. According to a New York Times poll, over 90% of Americans would prefer that their food was labeled to reflect the contents containing GM ingredients. 37% of those surveyed expressed concerns that GMOs in their food may cause cancer and allergies. 75% of respondents said they would not eat genetically modified fish. United Fishermen of Alaska represents 34 Alaska commercial fishing organizations and hundreds of individual fishermen and related businesses. We strongly support HJR 12 and applaud the state legislature for your dedication to Alaska's fisheries and our position in the global marketplace. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Leach. Any questions for Ms. Leach? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
So I will now close public testimony. There is no one, unless there's someone else in the room wishing to testify. Seeing no one, public testimony is closed. Is there further discussion in the room related to the resolution? Senator Coghill.
If I could have the sponsor just respond to the doctor who talked about the ACWA advantage, especially on the section, page 2, line 8, where it says, could devastate native fish populations. Do you have a response for that?
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Through the chair, I go back to these reports and what we saw in these reports, and this was a question during the application period of whether, you know, this threat was real. And these reports actually came out, and in fact, I wrote the FDA and asked for them to be included for consideration in their decision because these reports came out just after the comment period deadline during the application. And so, you know, these are scientific papers. You know, they're peer-reviewed, you know, released into the scientific community that showed that this interbreeding took place and why it was such a concern. And so the individual, you know, is using the examples of the proximity and the different locations and things like that. But, for example, in Panama, the company was fined for some issues they had there with escapement issues. And so, you know, there are things that are unpredictable, like an earthquake or like, you know, we just had here. I mean, there's things that we have limited ability to control, like a natural disaster that, you know, some circumstance like that could absolutely result in a major release into an adjacent water body. So, you know, I think it's erring on the side of being conservative. In this case, I guess that's, you know, my position with so many unanswered questions.
Follow-up, Senator Coghill?
Thank you. I think it's obviously an area of dispute, Madam Chair.
Further questions? Senator Wilikowski.
There was a statement made by Mr. Giddings on the fish being sterile. Would you agree with that statement?
Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski, it's not true that that's the case 100% of the time, which is why there's a concern.
Further questions? All right. Seeing none, it is my intention to move this bill today, so I will turn to Vice Chair Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we move the House Joint Resolution Number 12, Work Order 30-LS0276/Delta from the committee with individual recommendations in the attached zero fiscal note.
Any objection? Seeing none, House Joint Resolution 12 will move from this committee. This is the only committee of referral for this resolution. So while folks are signing that, this will conclude our meeting for today. Our next hearing will be Wednesday, January 31st. The committee will take up a presentation from the Department of Fish and Game on our state-managed refuges, sanctuaries, and critical habitat areas. So if you would sign the documents before you leave the room, the meeting will be adjourned at this time. Let the record reflect that the time is 4:34 p.m.